by all human standards, should be deeply disappointed. If some of us had been through what he had faced, we would be emotionally dead. And yet here we hear the words of a man who is very much alive in spite of all that has happened. Why is he so very much alive, so buoyant? What keeps him going? What in the golden message has touched the very depth of his being? What is it that keeps him singing when others refuse to sing? What is it that when the curtains of despair hang heavily over everything, that he is able to peer beyond the clouds? When the bright fires of faith have been extinguished everywhere else but in his heart, how does he keep his faith in God? The record tells us that he is following a vision. What about you and I? How can we make it when the light is flashing red at every intersection we approach? How can we keep our heads when others are losing theirs and maybe blaming it on us? The answer is for us to have a vision, a spiritual vision which we can follow, a vision which will lead us to higher service to God, the church, and other people. Let us then look at the words which fell from the lips of the Apostle Paul at a very critical time in his life. Let us try to understand the deep meaning of following a vision, what it meant to Paul, and what it can mean to us. I have 3 points in the development of the text. The first one is a chance to speak before Agrippa. And maybe you've heard of Agrippa. King Agrippa II was the son of Agrippa I and the grandson of Herod the Great. He was in Caesarea as a visiting king, as a puppet monarch set up by the Romans who held the Jews in a kind of military occupation. There was a prisoner whose name was Paul. He was a problem for them since nobody knew what to do with him. He was a Roman citizen, a Pharisee, a well-trained man who spoke several languages fluently. But on the other hand, he was a convert to Christianity and the center of many problems for both the Romans and the Jewish religious leaders. After 2 years in prison, he was still a sore spot for the people in charge. After a hearing before Festus, the new governor, a hearing had been arranged before Agrippa. If Agrippa had the courage to either release him or condemn him to death, the Jewish leader's problem would be over. Let me give you the setting for this hearing. I can imagine the scenery. I've read a lot about it. Let me see if I can give you a setting. In a very majestic setting, with the sun shining through the multicolored windows of the Great Hall, with Roman tribunes in their bright colored satin jackets and their tight, light colored pants ready to play their music. It was a moment to behold, with the gallery section filled with the curious and the excited. This was a special moment. And here and there in the audience were some faithful Christians who were anxious to hear Paul defend himself and his faith. King Agrippa, a dignified man of wealth and position, seemed to be somewhat offended by this unpredictable crowd. The trumpets blared and all eyes turned toward the arch doorway. And between two guards with four following comes a man who is the center of attraction this day. The man is known as the old preacher. or as the Apostle Paul. Some of the members of the church who were tolerated but not loved were able to be there. They were amazed to see that Paul looked so bad. Been in jail for the past 2 years. His steps were slowed and a pronounced limp accentuated every step. His face was bearded and generally unkempt. His prison clothing was shabby, and he blinked his eyes often as if he was having trouble adjusting his eyes to the bright light. You get the picture? Never before had Paul been faced with such a spectacular magnificence. It might have been enough to awe a lesser man, but only God can awe a faithful Christian. Now, Paul stands before the king, and the king said to him, "You are permitted to speak for yourself." And Paul's response was, "I think myself happy, O King Agrippa, but I shall answer for myself this day before you, touching all of the things of which I am accused by the Jews, because I know you are expert in the rules of Judaism, which I am accused of breaking by preaching Jesus Christ. You know our laws and our doctrines, so I just ask you to hear me patiently." Well, what would Paul say? How would he say it? In this hour of trial, the right words could free him to return to the churches and the people that he loved. Would he be repentant and ask forgiveness for upsetting the city with this preaching? Or would he be charming and describing his training and his childhood? Paul was a great speaker, a proven orator, a gifted man. Would he boast of the good which he had done, the victories which he had accomplished? What would he talk about in that great hall before King Agrippa? Would you believe it that right away, as soon as he starts talking not about his finest hour, but about his worst hours? Yes, in this important moment, he starts to talk about the time when he hated Christians, when he did many things contrary to the name of Jesus Christ. "I broke up prayer meetings," he said. "I put many of these Christians in prison. I raised my voice in testimony against them. Some of them would renounce out of fear the Christ that they followed and turn away from the faith. Some of them would not turn against their Christ, so I had them killed for blasphemy, for speaking against Jehovah. I was so bitter in my anger that on my own time, I pursued them into strange cities. I was mean, I was thoughtless, I was bitter against all Christians, but something happened. And now, although I persecuted them, I am one of them today. This is my story and this is my song. And now I will tell you why I'm still following a vision." Second point, Paul's vision on the road to Damascus. Now, Paul's vision was a living vision. In other words, he had to live with it. You can have a vision before you die. This journey is over then. But here he had to live with it, even if it meant facing lonely and difficult moments. On this fateful day before Agrippa, what does he talk about but a vision which he had had more than 20 years before that? Let's listen to his dramatic description of that vision. You've read it. It's found in chapter 9, the book of Acts, and here in chapter 26, and I suspect he told it a lot more than that. "One day," Paul said, "I was on my way to Damascus with authority from the chief priests and something happened to me. O King, I saw a light above the brightness of the noonday sun. I saw a light which I had never seen before. I fell to the ground and my eyes were blinded. I thought I was going to die. But that's not all, O King. I heard something. You see, church, God not only shows us things that we can see, but he tells us things that we can hear. You ever heard a voice that nobody else could hear? If so, you know what I mean. The voice said, Saul, Saul, why do you persecute me? And I said, who are you, Lord? And the voice said, or might have said, I've dramatized this a little bit, my name is Jesus. My address is Nazareth. My footstool is in the earth, and my home is in glory. And Paul said, but Lord, I didn't do anything to you. True, I broke up some prayer meetings, and I locked up some Christians, and I beat up some preachers, and I helped to stone a deacon to death, but I didn't do anything to you. You know, so many of us make the mistake, when you mistreat someone, you do it not only to them, but to their Christ. Remember, Jesus said, inasmuch as you have done it to me, you have done it to the least of them, then I count there. And that goes for the good and the bad. It is me, Jesus was saying, that you persecute. But stand on your feet, Paul, because I have appeared to you for a purpose, to make you a minister and a witness, both of the things I show you now and the things I will show you. I suppose that Paul got a little teary-eyed then. Sometimes you get a little teary-eyed when you start talking about your conversion and what happened and what changed in your life. It's not a sign of weakness to shed a tear. Sometimes it's a sign of strength. We can cry when we're happy. We can cry when we think about the special vision. And then Paul says this, pointing a finger, I believe, at that King Agrippa. Oh, King Agrippa, I was not disobedient to the heavenly vision. Now that, I believe, is what's called a double negative. Ordinarily, you don't use a double negative. He could have said, I was obedient to the vision. But sometime when you want to emphasize, when you want to make it plain and dramatic, you use the double negative. That means positive, sure enough. King, I was not disobedient to the heavenly vision. I just can't help myself. I have been overcome with a magnificent obsession. I have been dug up by what we used to call the plow of the gospel. My heart is fixed and my mind is made up. And I will go and I shall go to see what the end's going to be. I'm following this vision that I had on the road to Damascus. We used to sing a song. They said, what a wonderful change in my life has been wrought. Since Jesus came into my heart, floods of joy, oh, my soul, like a sea billows roll. Since Jesus came into my heart. Third point, my Damascus Road experience. You know, my conversion was not spectacular. I grew up in the church, did all of the church activities, Sunday school and BTU and vacation Bible school and plays and poems, all of it. But by the time I reached the age of 16, I drifted away. I thought that I knew it all about life and religion. When you're 16, that's an easy journey to make. By the time I got 17, I was sure I was sure that I knew it all. But oh, one night, when I was 19 years old, something happened to me as I sat by the bedside of my dying grandmother. Something very special happens. The God who made the universe spoke to me. James, you must preach. I'm calling you to preach. Preach? I knew how to recite, but I didn't know what to say. Right away, I began to understand that I really didn't know anything anyway. That in fact, I didn't really know anything important about life or religion or any of it. But I began a journey. And you know, over 60 years later, I'm still following a vision. I'm still being guided by that vision. My life is still being shaped by that vision. Yes, I'm retired. Some people don't think so. The vision so long ago still haunts me. I get flashbacks. I still wake up in a shiver. If following a vision takes me to good times or bad times, I'll follow till I die. And I'll understand it better by and by. Have you had a real Damascus Road experience? Have you? You don't have to answer out loud, but in your own heart, have you? It might not have happened on a highway like it did to Paul. It could have been on a dirt road or on a Monaco Parkway or on some frontage road. Could have been in some little wooden church on a hill like we used to have down home. A lot of places it could have been. My question, have you had a calling, a vision of God with what he wants you to do with yourself? Now, every vision is not a call to preach. That's how some people get a little mixed up. Every vision of God is not a call to preach. But every vision is a directive to serve. And if you keep praying for a vision, it can change your life. Let me ask a couple of heavy questions. Why do some make it? And under the same circumstances, others fail. I've seen people, I've seen preachers, top heavy with talent, not make it. Have you seen that? And I've seen other people with just a few breaks make it all of the way. They know all of what life and all of the things about life become because they have benefited from the vision. How does it work? I don't know. Tell me, how can the same diet make one man or woman a midget and the other a giant? How can the same swamp make one man a mud rat and the other a praying saint? Paul said, having obtained the help of God, I continue until this day, witnessing to both great and small and preaching to the Gentiles. That's people who were not Jews. And at this mention of his preaching unto the hated Gentiles, some of the people around the throne began to hiss and to boo, and near bedlam broke loose around the judgment seat. And then Festus, the governor, acting as a prosecutor, jumped up, and he turned to Paul, saying, Paul, much learning has made you mad. You know, people often want to question your sanity. When you start really sure enough trusting God, people want to say you're crazy. When you say you're listening to a voice that only faith can hear. In conclusion, but Paul stood and spoke boldly. He said, I'm not mad, but I speak the truth. With his eyes glowing like coals straight at the pale face of the king, Paul said, "For the king knows these things that I'm talking about. I know he knows the power of God. I am preaching one thing, that God raised Jesus from the dead." Looks at the king again and says, "Should it be thought a thing incredible that God should raise the dead?" When Paul got through talking, when he got through talking about his calling, when he got through telling his story, preaching his favorite sermon, because I think he preached this thing over and over again. That's what you do sometimes. Old King Agrippa was moving from side to side, sitting in his chair. He had to make a decision, and he couldn't make a decision. The Christians in the crowd were out there in the corner where they were, crying and holding on to each other. They're hearing Paul talk about the wonderful vision, what God had done and what God would do. And they were just, you have to just hold on to somebody sometime when you're touched and moved by realizing what God has done. Lord have mercy. People had their hands in the air, some of them. The king's attendants were waiting to hear what the king would say. The fingers of the king touched the sweating wrist of Festus, because a judge can do that to a prosecutor, urging him to sit down. Then in a whisper, King Agrippa said words which echoed down the corridors of time as a challenge to every person who is not a Christian. You know what Agrippa said? "Almost you persuade me to be a Christian. Almost, but not quite. Almost, but I don't have the courage. Almost, but I'm not ready." He said if Paul had not appealed, this is how he copped out. If Paul had not appealed to Caesar, he wouldn't have to go to Rome. But he's already appealed to Caesar, so he's got to make that long journey to Rome. And oh, you know the rest of that story. He went to Rome. He spent some more time in jail there, down in Nero's prison. Outside of his barred window was a chopping block. And he knew one day he had an appointment there. But when the day came that he told him, "You're going tomorrow," you know what he said? "The time of my departure is at hand." At hand means near, means close. You're almost there. "And I am now ready to be offered. I have fought a good fight. I have finished my course, and I have kept the faith." When you're talking like that, you know you're going to heaven. Because that's what heaven is all about. You don't have to worry about folks who can talk like that. When that hour comes, they know they have fought a really good fight. But what about the people who put it off till another time? Maybe some here today who just can't make a choice. Can't make a decision. I worry about people go through life almost persuaded. Think about it. Don't you be the one who is almost, for almost won't do. How about you today? Are you almost ready to accept Christ? Are you almost ready to come back to the church? Are you almost ready to be saved? Almost. Almost. Almost won't do it. God bless you.
Give God praise for his word today. And as Dr. Peters was sharing, almost is not good enough. And today the Lord speaks to someone's heart today who's been battling with almost, maybe all week, maybe just this day. And he says to you that today is the day of salvation. So as we stand, we invite you today.